space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Thank you.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Voltage, brother, sister. Yep, that's it. High voltage. Well, today is the day that we ask you the most important question of all time. Are you crazy? Are you crazy? Huh? Alright, don't walk away from me when I'm talking to you. Yeah. Well, you're listening to Shaziz Radio and People for People Radio and TCT Radio and whichever other network that you may be on at this any given time listening in. So, today's show, we're talking about, are you crazy? We're going to find out if you're crazy or not. Anyway, if you want to join over there at People for People Radio chat, there's a link right underneath the chat rooms that says People for People Radio. So jump over there and say hi. There's some wonderful individuals over there, and I think you'd like to make a new friend or two. There you go. And so anyway, jump over there to the superchat.html and scroll down, and you'll find the link for People for People Radio and TCT Radio. But Super Chat's pretty awesome because you got access to not one but four separate chat rooms. And so with that said, you might want to call some people up and say, hey, jump over there to Super Chat, man. Just like that old crazy Shaziz with the wild hair is getting rowdy today. He's getting kind of ridiculous, man. He's trying to ask people if they're crazy. Are you crazy? Huh? Have you lost your mind? I didn't have time to try to find one of those doggone YouTube to MP3 videos that, they did something screwy on those YouTube to MP3 things. And so you used to be able to go just this one particular website, and you put in a YouTube video and you download it, and then, you had that so you could play on your podcast or, maybe just store the song or whatever. But now they've done something screwy to the original one, and so now you got to go through one that's, I guess, Microsoft approved. Could be Google approved, too. But nonetheless, I'm going to play this pretty much live through here. This Scramjet, the engine that will take humanity beyond Mach 10. Woo. Woo. That's pretty cool. Mach 10, that's fast. That's how fast the wind was blowing whenever my hair got all like it you see right now. Anyway, once again, are you crazy? Have you lost your mind? Let's play this.
In March of 2004, a test plane mounted on a rocket carried aloft by a bomber made history at Edwards Air Force Base, east of Los Angeles. After release from its B-52 mothership, the small unmanned X-43 flew at the amazing speed of Mach 7, faster than any known jet aircraft has ever flown.
It was a very significant event. Some people have even gone so far as to equate it actually with the Wright brothers' flight.
When it separated from the rocket, the X-43 accelerated on its own power to Mach 7.
Mach 7!
Mach 7 is approximately 5,000 miles per hour.
Approximately 5,000 miles per hour. Are you crazy? Have you lost your mind?
You can imagine flying New York to Los Angeles in just over a half an hour.
The NASA Dryden Flight Research Center says the scramjet-powered X-43 is capable of reaching at least Mach 10. A scramjet is a supersonic combustion ramjet. The ramjet, sometimes called the flying stovepipe, is one of the simplest engine designs ever conceived, with virtually no moving parts. It's basically a hollow tube into which fuel is injected and ignited. Unlike regular jets, there are no compressor blades inside to compress the air. In a ramjet, supersonic air is slowed down to subsonic speed inside the jet engine. But in a scramjet, the air moves through the engine at supersonic speed.
The X-43 vehicle has to endure some very extreme temperatures. The temperature along the leading edges of the vehicle, for example, are in excess of 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
3,000 degrees Fahrenheit? Are you crazy? Have you lost your ever-loving mind?
The front of the X-43 and the leading edges of the tail are made of carbon-carbon, a lightweight and strong composite material.
Carbon-carbon. Woo! A lightweight and strong material. 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Are you crazy?
Can withstand extremely high temperatures.
Carbon-carbon that we use is sort of a high-tech cousin to carbon fiber. It's the carbon itself is different. It's a much higher temperature. The bonding agent is much higher temperature. It's good to 3,000 degrees without degrading. It doesn't wear away.
engine at supersonic speeds has been described as trying to keep a match lit in a hurricane.
The plane doesn't really blow out because there are areas in the engine, small areas that aren't supersonic, that allow a flame to grab hold and to sustain itself.
There's something about flying that fast that I think just captures the imagination of folks. It's just phenomenal to imagine flying that fast.
I'd say the main interest you find for the scramjet in the near term would be the military. They would like to have a missile that goes, say, Mach 5, Mach 6, 5 or 6 times the speed of sound, so it can get to a target very quickly and has a lot of range in doing that. You can do that now with a solid rocket motor, but it runs out of gas pretty quickly.
The Air Force is also interested in using scramjet propulsion for super-fast bombers that could strike anywhere in the world with amazing speed, flying more than 10 times as fast as current bombers.
There's no reason that a human couldn't pilot or be a passenger on a hypersonic airplane. Vision vehicles, as we call them, include space access vehicles to take astronauts to the space station or to orbit, and also potentially passenger vehicles, again, to take people to the other side of the world.
Some experts believe the scramjet could usher in a whole new era in aviation.
We entered the 19th century moving at 6 miles an hour, the speed of an animal-drawn vehicle. We entered the 20th century moving at 60 miles an hour, the speed of a steam locomotive. We entered the 21st century at 600 miles an hour, the speed of an intercontinental jet airliner. And if you plot this in semi-logarithmic fashion, you get a nice straight line that indicates we may well enter the next century at 6,000 miles an hour, which is precisely where you
6,000 miles an hour?
Pointing us.
Are you crazy? Have you lost your ever-loving mind, jive turkey? 6,000 miles an hour. I want somebody to get a grip on that, man. 6,000 miles an hour. 6,000 miles per hour. Kind of rolls off the tongue, never doing it. 6,000 miles per hour. Wow. Alright, well, you know, there is this new conspiracy out there that basically says that passenger jet airliners carry no fuel. Well, in a sense, they'd actually have to carry some fuel to start it. But once they got it started, using turbine technology, if you actually think about how a turbo works, then once you get the understanding of how an actual turbo for, like, let's say a hot rod, a race car, or whatever, once you figure out how that turbo actually works, then, you know, you can understand that once you've got this thing started, using some technology like they do in oil burners and stuff like that, you know, you get a certain surface red hot inside there, you know, and so you no longer need a match, you know, like in a diesel engine. Once you get a diesel engine cylinder up to operating temperature, you no longer need the spark plugs. Well, in diesels, they don't have spark plugs. They got what's called glow plugs. And glow plugs are in a diesel are only temporarily used to raise the temperature inside the cylinder up to operating temperature. And then from that point on, the compression of the fuel as it comes inside and the air that is brought in with it is maintaining that heat, you know, friction and compression and all that, and you get what's called compression ignition for a diesel engine. So how could that work as far as a jet engine? Well, if you ever pay attention on, like, hold on, I gotta get a drink of coffee here. Good coffee. You drinking coffee in the middle of your radio show? Are you crazy? Have you lost your mind? Yep. I'm probably by far the craziest man that ever existed in the history of time. I'm beyond crazy. I'm the crazy of crazies. Alright, so anyway, if you think about when you watch videos of, let's say, when the space shuttle's coming in or any of these other you know, supposed spacecrafts or whatever, you know, they coming into a dense atmosphere, and between the speed and the friction of the atmosphere, it gets really super hot. So they have to have these special panels on the bottom of them so that they don't burn up in re-entry and stuff. So that tells you something right there. So you can imagine a vehicle traveling 6,000 miles an hour through a dense atmosphere, how much friction that would cost. And you seen or you heard the man say that the temperature on the outer parts of that thing will get up into 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Think about that for a second. Give me a second here. 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Are you crazy? Dude, how many metals we got out there that can withstand 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit? I mean, materials. Well, apparently they got some material. It's carbon-carbon, whatever that is. Carbon-carbon. This carbon on top of carbon. Carbon fiber on top of fiber. Whatever. Either way, it can withstand a lot of heat, man. And so, with that said, you know that something moving through our atmosphere at a rapid rate, shoving air down at supersonic speed in through that, will cause enough friction that some particular material inside this scramjet engine will literally become red hot, glowing red hot. And so inside there, any fuel that you put inside there would spontaneously combust, instantaneously ignite from the temperature of the glowing material inside there. So let's take a look here real quick. And according to NASA, the gases in Earth's atmosphere include nitrogen at 78%, oxygen at 21%, argon at 0.93%, carbon dioxide at 0.0%, and trace amounts of neon, helium, methane, krypton, and hydrogen, as well as water vapor. Water vapor. Are you crazy? All right, so, yeah, water vapor, essentially water. All right, so let's just start off with nitrogen for a second. Uses for nitrogen. Nitrogen is important to the chemical industry. It is used to make fertilizers, nitric acid, nylon, dyes, and hope you're setting down here, explosives. What? Are you crazy? Yep, and let's see, and explosives. To make these products, nitrogen must first be reacted with hydrogen to produce ammonia. Going back to gases that make up the atmosphere, I thought I might have seen that down there somewhere. Trace amounts of neon, helium, methane, krypton, and hydrogen. Hydrogen, as well as water vapor. Wow. Okay, well, let's look at this again there. Nitrogen, important to chemical industry. It is used to make fertilizers, nitric acid, nylon, dyes, and explosives. To make these products, nitrogen must first be reacted with hydrogen to produce ammonia. This is done by the Haber process, which I don't have no idea what the Haber process is, but maybe we should just Google that up then. The Haber process. Copy. All right, let's see what this is, because I have no idea. Never heard of the Haber process. Haber process, an industrial process for producing ammonia from nitrogen and hydrogen using an iron catalyst at high temperatures and pressure. In order to start a fire, you need three things. You need oxygen, you need fuel, and ignition source. All of which can be found in the process that we have just explained about the scramjet. So, let's see. Steven said in the chat room, the X-43A, the prototype of the Aurora spy plane, the X-43 was just a drone to show proof of principle. And he's also put a link down in the chat room as well. Let me take a look at that. Yes, a beautiful picture. I love that. It looks like a spaceship is what the Aurora jet plane looks like. So anyway, technology is pretty advanced as far as I'm concerned in that particular deal. But the question that you have to ask yourself, when you go look at these three video links I've posted into the chat room and you start listening to the numbers of gallons of fuel that they say they put in passenger airplanes, one would have to start doing some serious thinking about that situation. I can't remember what the number was, but it was in the tons, like 83 tons of fuel. 83 tons of fuel. I don't know, I'm going to have to Google that now. Somebody Google that for me. How much fuel goes in a passenger airplane? Alright, I'm typing this in. Much fuel in a passenger jet. There we go, that'll work. How much fuel does a passenger jet use? A plane like a Boeing 747 uses approximately 1 gallon of fuel, about 4 liters, every second. Over the course of a 10-hour flight, it may burn 36,000 gallons.
36,000 gallons? Are you mad? Are you crazy? Have you lost your ever-loving mind?
That's 150,000 liters for those on a different scale. So, that's 5 gallons per fuel per mile. And how much does 36,000 gallons of fuel weigh? Let's see. Let's Google that. How much does 36,000 gallons of fuel weigh? Copy. How much does 36,000 gallons of jet fuel weigh? How much does jet fuel weigh? Where in the heck? 1 gallon of jet fuel. Man, are you serious? How much does 1 gallon? I don't want to know how much 1 gallon. How much does 36,000 gallons weigh? Anybody know that? If you do know that, type it in the chat room. How much does 36,000 gallons of jet fuel weigh? Okay. We're just going to have to do this the hard way, I guess. Because Google ain't telling me. How many pounds is 1 gallon of jet fuel weigh? There's a Yahoo answer. Let's look over there and see what Yahoo says about it. The standard... what? Advertise this, man. Giant turkey. Jump up in there on my screen while I'm trying to read something. The standard is 6.79 pounds per gallon. So 6.79 pounds per gallon times 63,000 gallons of jet fuel. Alrighty then. Jeez. Somebody do the math on that one and tell me if that sounds kosher. Sounds crazy to me. But nonetheless, who am I to say? Because I'm not the guy. You know, I'm just a man. I'm just a dude with wild hair and such. All right, so 63,000 gallons of fuel at about 6-point-some-odd pounds per gallon. That's a whole heck of a lot of weight for a plane to be dragging around on top of luggage and people and all that kind of stuff. So what would I do to resolve that such issue or whatever? Well, I'd take a little bit of information from diesel technology, and I'd start working out a compression ignition style, fuel system. So what I'd have to do first is I'd have to get that engine up to operating temperature. I'd have to bring the temperature of that thing up by compressing the air, and when I compress that air and keep on compressing that air to get hotter and hotter and hotter, and then from that point on, any fuel that was sucked into the front of that jet engine would instantaneously ignite because of the temperature of the compression going on and the materials that the inside of that turbine was working. So if I'm bringing in nitrogen at 78% and oxygen at 21% and argon at 0.93% and carbon dioxide at 0.04% and then trace amounts of neon, helium, methane, krypton, and hydrogen as well as water vapor, and we know that water is hydrogen and oxygen, essentially, once I got that puppy fired up, I could just go pick my fuel up on the way. Are you crazy? Did Shaziz just say you're going to pick your fuel up on the way? Why not? Because according to NASA, the gases in the Earth's atmosphere include nitrogen at 78%, oxygen at 21%, argon at 0.93%, carbon dioxide, and keep in mind, carbon dioxide at 0.04%. Carbon. Bueller. Number 9. Anyway, instead of being ridiculous, let's talk about the trace amounts of neon, helium, methane, krypton, and hydrogen, as well as water vapor. And of course we said, or science said, that water is hydrogen and oxygen. So you fire this puppy up, it's red hot inside there, you're compressing the air, you're sucking air in from the atmosphere with all of these that I've listed, and I guess I will copy and paste this again and just throw it down into the chat room one more time over there to superchat.html and take a peek at it, study this, and tell me whether or not you think that any of these potential products that are basically in our atmosphere that helps us breathe and all that kind of stuff, and you know, tell me whether or not any of these could actually be utilized as a fuel source. Alright? Now I know what science says. I know what common sense says. And I know what my mind says. See, in the racing industry, they got these things called turbos. Alright? And a turbo, it's interesting how a turbo works, is because one side of the turbo is actually connected to your exhaust, so it uses the exhaust pressure of your engine itself to begin to spin a turbo. Well, that hot air going inside the one side is exhausted back out your exhaust again. So we're not going to use that portion of it. What we're going to do is we're going to use the opposite side of the turbo to bring air in from outside the vehicle, compress that air, raise the temperature of that air up, and then because of the efficiency of this turbo, we're going to have to cool that air down to some extent with what they call an intercooler for your engine doesn't get hot air shoved into the intake portion. Now we want what's in that hot air, that warm air now, hot air, warm air, whatever, we got to cool it down, remember? We want what's in that air because according to what NASA has explained to us in the makeup of the air coming from the outside, we have nitrogen at 78%, which we also know that uses for nitrogen, one of the uses for nitrogen is an explosive. Yeah, wow, imagine that. And so we're going to bring the nitrogen in at 78%, and of course, you know, to have an ignition source, you must have oxygen. And so now we have 21% oxygen able to come in there as well. And we have argon, which if you ever go out and look into the welding industry, matter of fact, I'm not even going to say it. Just Google it up, what they use argon in welding for. All right? Just check it out. Why do they use argon in welding? Well, we're getting 0.93% of argon in our intake now because of this turbo, you know. And carbon dioxide, you know. Carbon's a fuel source. I wonder if anybody knew that. All right, well, check out carbon dioxide and traces amount of neon, helium, methane, krypton, and hydrogen, as well as water vapor. So, now our turbo is bringing not only these materials in with it, it's boosting the pressure up so that when it's rammed down inside your intake, you get a boost in pressure with all these extra goodies to add to the already fuel that you already have on board, and then that's shoved down into the intake and through the injectors and all that kind of stuff, and you know the whole combustion process goes. And so in quite literal sense, you're bringing extra fuel and oxygen in from the outside to add to what you've already got on board. So in reality, if these conspiracy theory guys are right about this, that jet fuel is actually a hoax, all they had to have was just enough of fuel to get that engine up to operating temperature. And once it's up to operating temperature, the rest of it is using your atmosphere as fuel. Stephen Gibbons said at 40,000 feet, there is no need for cooling between 30,000 and 40,000 feet, 9,000 and 12,000 miles. The cruising altitude of most jets aircraft temperature ranges from negative 40 degrees Fahrenheit to 70 degrees Fahrenheit. That's minus 40 Celsius to 57 degrees Celsius for those of you on the other scale. Ooh, it's making me dizzy. I gotta get me something to drink here. It's times like this I wish somebody was on the Mad Science Show. So if you happen to be contacted up there and you want to join in on the chat right there, just throw a thumbs up over there in the Mad Science Skype room if you're in there, or let me know somewhere. Just add a contact and I'll throw you up in the show. That way I'll have a chance to breathe now and then. Anyway, so, when you look at these three videos that I posted down there, some of them got a little bit of the same content in them, but they all come back to about the same thing, is that if you think about how much 63,000 gallons of fuel would weigh, and you look at the construction of the actual airplanes themselves, I think they call them A380s airplanes. I can't remember. Anyway, nonetheless, they're aluminum bodies, aluminum wings, and if you look inside these, this one particular guy is showing inside the wing as much as he can find that he can see inside there, and can't see any place for fuel tanks. So, what does that mean to you, the consumer? That means you're told that jet fuels use a lot of fuel. And so that means that if jet fuels are using a lot of fuel, then the customer has to, reimburse the company plus their, fees for actually the service and all that kind of stuff for the cost of the fuel and maintenance and so on. Oh, sorry about that, Stephen. He said, "Are you crazy? Meters, not miles, bro." Yeah. I told you old Shaziz is the craziest, by far the craziest man on this planet. I don't think there, I hope somebody out there can find somebody crazier than me, man. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, NASA messed up bad, putting all this information out like that. And even when you're listening to that video that I played there about the podcast, and you're hearing about the temperatures at which the outside of these scramjets, this amazing piece of engineering, and how the engine works with very few moving parts inside of it, he said basically the engine was a flying stovepipe, you know. So you're going at supersonic speeds, and that air is rushing through there, and all the atmosphere, the hydrogen and oxygen and nitrogen, is being crammed inside this hot chamber. So you'd only need a tiny bit of fuel in order to maintain the temperature inside that engine, in order to, as that fuel that's coming in is being burned. Not to mention, there is an actual equation out there that tells you from the ground being zero all the way up to hundreds of volts per so many feet in the air, that the atmosphere is electrically charged. And so, you know, it's amazing. Everything that science tells us for ignition, everything that the auto industry explains about the internal combustion engine, all different types of internal combustion engines, not just the gasoline, not just the propane, or, you know, butane, or even hydrogen technology that they're using, and you know, diesel engines with compression ignition, air compressor technology, induction heating technology. All these different things combined into one, basically you got the makings for a super machine. So if they're actually using all this knowledge that I've been talking about for a long time, trying to get people to understand that basic science says is possible, even NASA claims that they actually use this stuff. Well, let's see. So, if they've been using this all along, it begs the question. We're paying for all this fuel that they're supposedly bringing on board all these passenger jets. But that's just one drop in the bucket compared to all the money that is spent out for NASA's budget, which I believe was something like $50 million or more a day. And we're paying for all the maintenances on the roads. We're paying for the electric company and coal-fired power plants and nuclear power plants, all the energy industry, everyone you can think about, including wind power and solar power. Because when companies tap into that kind of stuff and they're grabbing power out of the wind, or they're grabbing, you know, hydroelectrics like the dams, or they're using solar power and then basically shipping that down the line and selling it to you, the consumer, it seems to me like you, the consumer, have been paying for everything under the sun, including the sun and the wind and the rain and all that kind of jazz. So that's why I said at the beginning of this show, are you crazy? Have you lost your ever-loving mind? According to NASA, the gases in the Earth's atmosphere include 78% nitrogen, 21% oxygen, argon at 0.93%, carbon dioxide at 0.04%, trace amounts of neon, helium, methane, krypton, and hydrogen, as well as water vapor. Shaziz is scratching his head. What? Can you run that by me one more time? And you want to tell me that we need fossil fuel? Now, I paid attention in science class, folks. And I paid attention in so many different areas of study, it is ridiculous. I shoved a ludicrous amount of knowledge in my mind before the age of 17. And I paid attention. And so I know how to build a campfire. I know how to do quite a few things. What I don't know how to do is understand how it is that this world ever claimed to have an energy crisis. How it is that people are still paying for electricity, and in some incidents, paying for water. Well, maybe in a lot more than incidents, because you actually buy it from the water company who drags it up and supposedly cleans it up and then sends it down, and you get fresh water, you know, guaranteed all the time. You know, using chemicals like chlorine and maybe a little bit of fluoride to help your teeth out, make it pretty and all that kind of stuff. You want to be pretty, don't you? You don't want to have some cruddy looking teeth like Billy Bob? Huh? Are you crazy? Better get on in there and brush those teeth with that fluoride. Don't look up a dance fluoridosis either. And, for that matter, don't read the back of the toothpaste if you're paranoid. Because if it says at the back of the toothpaste that in case you actually accidentally ingested, call poison control immediately. I wonder how many people said, you called up poison control and said, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. What am I going to do, man? I swallowed the toothpaste. And they're all like, what you want? What you talking about? Oh, this poison control, you in trouble? Yeah, I swallowed the toothpaste. And they'll be like, yeah, shut up, stupid, and hang up on you. What? Why are you going to tell somebody to call poison control? You know what? That'd be the best prank of all time. I need somebody to get a tube of toothpaste, take a taste of it, call up the doggone poison control center and say, I swallowed my toothpaste. What am I going to do? Am I going to die? And they'll tell you what you got to do in order to, you know, not die from poison control or poison from toothpaste. Are you crazy? So, come on, somebody get on the phone and call poison control and ask them if that's true. Alright, so they said that. It's on the back of the toothpaste. Don't nobody... If you don't believe me, Google it up. I'm sure there's a picture of it. If you do brush your teeth and have that product in your facilities, then rush in there right now. I'll give you a second. And grab it up and take a read the back of it. Alright, everybody got their toothpaste? Read the back of it? What's it say? If you got some good typing skills, type in what it says on the warning label on the back of your toothpaste into the chat room so everybody else can see. Well, I never noticed that before. I said I'm going to call post control if I accidentally swallow some of that toothpaste. Anyway, what's that all got to do with anything? None of it makes any doggone sense. If you're paying for water, your toothpaste is poison, and these giant turkeys are charging you a expensive bill just to ride on one of these jet airplanes, and then you find out later on down the line that they were, not having to take all that fuel with them, that they were actually only using a little bit of fuel just to get the doggone thing up to operating temperature. And once it was up to operating temperature, as long as they kept just a little bit of fuel left on board for emergencies, such as maybe one of the engines shut down and they had to put a little bit more fuel in there to bring it back up to operating temperature, or maybe even use some induction technology to raise that operating temperature up inside there or something like that. Who knows? But it's all available. So if that conspiracy is true, then you've been paying a lot of money for a ridiculously low amount of cost to the actual business that you're working with, whatever. So, I'm just trying to get a grip on this thing right here, because it just, until I saw this actual conspiracy, never even really contemplated on, you know, why would they lie to you about how much fuel actually goes into an airplane and how it was actually distributed. Now, I can imagine that a lot of the older Cessnas and stuff like that, they got a fuel tank on board, and it might have a similar type of fuel distribution kind of deal. But when you're getting into a passenger airliner, and you're talking about lifting 63,000 pounds or 63,000 gallons at 6 point some odd pounds apiece, which I think somebody said it was like 83 tons. That's a heck of a lot of weight, along with everything else. Luggage and people and the plane itself, in order to get that thing off the ground and to be able to fly the way that it does, that's pretty impressive, man. Let's see. Right here. 1-800-222-1222. Hold on. I'm going to have to like do this on the other one. Let's try that again. Let's see. Try this again.
1-800-222-1222. 1-800-222-1222. If you think it might be poison, then the first thing you should do is call 1-800-222-1222. Poison is the kind of thing you're not supposed to touch. Old prescriptions, cleaning stuff, or spider bites and such. If you swallowed something bad or think you took too much, call the Poison Control Center hotline. We're the people you can trust.
For poison emergencies or just questions, the Poison Control Center hotline is here 24/7 with the expert help you need. Free and confidential. We hope you never need us, but keep our number by the phone.
1-800-222-1222. 1-800-222-1222.
1-800-222-1222.
If you take it out of poison and you don't know what to do, call 1-800-222-1222.
Yeah, that's cool, man. That's compliments of Stephen Gibbons. I don't know where he found that, but that man's amazing. So call 1-800-222. Alright. Are you crazy? Have you lost your ever-loving mind? Stephen said the above may make a good intro for the show. You know what? I might have like to save that. That is, that's true. That would be good. 1-800-222-2222. Alright, so if you got poison, now you know how to call them. Call them up, tell them tell them I'm dying. I think I'm dying. If I swallow my toothpaste, I think I'm not doing so well. My eyes are blurring on me. Alright, so anybody ever get the impression you might be getting lied to? You get the impression that you might have been shortchanged on things? You know, paying electric bill, paying a water bill, paying all these utilities and paying for fuel to go here and fuel to go there. And then you find out later on down the line that there's a good possibility that using turbo technology, you could take your fuel tank out from underneath your car and put a little small tank up there underneath the hood and just have enough fuel, or not even use fuel at all, just basically use induction heating to quite literally raise the temperature of your cylinders up and then start sucking air in from the atmosphere and use that as fuel and pick your fuel up on the way down the road. It's just a thought. So if I'm saying I'm crazy already, it don't matter whether you're calling me crazy or not. So I'm just telling you flat out, I must be crazy. I must have lost my ever-loving mind. NASA said, according to NASA, let's get that good voice going. Me. According to NASA, now somebody just scrolled up on me. I gotta start all over again. Okay, let's go on this side over there, because there's 4 chat rooms over there in the superchat.html. According to NASA, the gases in the Earth's atmosphere include nitrogen at 78%, oxygen at 21%, argon at 0.93%, carbon dioxide at 0.04%, trace amounts of neon, helium, methane, krypton, and hydrogen, as well as water vapor. Have you lost your mind? See, NASA said that. That's what NASA said. That's what our atmosphere is made of. That's what they said. They also told us that moving quickly into a atmosphere such as ours, because it's so thick and because of the different things that's going on in the atmosphere that have to do with electricity, that there are certain precautions that you need to take when coming back from space and moving in through the atmosphere, or even flying in a supersonic jet or a scramjet. Do you know there's a jet out there that they said, while it's sitting on the runway, that it's actually leaking fuel out? So they got to fuel it right before they get ready to take off, get it up there. It's actually leaking fuel until it gets up to its speed. Once it gets up to its speed, as the aircraft itself begins to expand from being pressurized or pressurized or whatever, one direction or another, it seals everything up and you can fly and you're not leaking as much fuel down there, but you're moving along, brother. You're going so ridiculously fast, somebody's saying, that's ludicrous, man. Why are you even doing that? Because you see all the things about G-forces. You know, I bet you if you're flying at Mach 5 or whatever that last one was right there, your eyeballs would be like sucked back through the tail of the airplane and shit. Oh, man. So, whatever. Oh, man. What a world. What a world we live in. So the technology for free energy has quite literally been used right underneath everyone's nose. Directly. Directly underneath your nose. You have been lied to. You've been ripped off. And they talk about, you know, well, we gotta collect all these taxes so we can fix your roads and keep your streets and all these emergency services and such. Oh, man. That's why I call it mad science. That is exactly why I call it mad science. And people just don't get it. They don't seem to understand. No matter what I say on here, I'll have some troll come along and start bad-mouthing and smart-mouthing. You don't know what you're talking about. Okay, let's go hypothetically and say I don't know what I'm talking about. So, does NASA, in your opinion, know what NASA's talking about? I mean, that's where all the supposed greatest scientists are, right? NASA. Okay, NASA said that the atmosphere was 78% nitrogen. Ad nauseum, nitrogen is important to the chemical industry. It is used to make fertilizers. I think I remember some crazy people making fertilizer bombs. Uh-oh, got two more listeners now. Whatever ABCs and the ATF and all that and FBI. Yeah, alright. Well, we're just talking about, you know, nitrogen, so don't get radical on us. Anyway, nitrogen is important to the chemical industry. It is used to make fertilizers, aka, don't say it, nitric acid, nylon, dyes and explosives. Uh-oh, two more listeners. CIA, Secret Service. Dad, burn it. Got to watch these terminologies. We'll get censored and jailed and disappeared and stuff. Anyway, that's what they said. All right? And so, nitrogen must first be reacted with hydrogen. Scratching head again. Hydrogen. Where are we going to get some of this pesky hydrogen at? Maybe in some of that water vapor that NASA says says the trace amounts of neon, helium, methane, krypton, and hydrogen, as well as water vapor. Huh. So, we got those two there. Alright. So, basically, this is done by the Haber process, which I'm not even going back into that again. That wasn't even interesting, the Haber process. It doesn't matter. We know that you use a catalytic converter in your automobile right now to basically burn off, reburn, wasted fuel. The actual engine, the internal combustion engine, is said to only be like 36% efficient, maybe even lower than that. So that means a large percentage of the fuel that you actually use in your combustion chamber that you're taking on board with your vehicle is actually getting wasted. And that's ridiculousness, man. If you got to go pay $4 per gallon and the actual way that they actually put this fuel together, you better not leave your gas cap off because that stuff will evaporate. And your gas will just go off into the air, man. So you got gas that if it isn't in a sealed container, it will evaporate. And if you're not cautious, you can actually cause yourself some explosion problems, which probably wouldn't be a good idea in any way. Let's see. Oh, there it is. That was an old message. Sorry. Okay, yeah. Alright, cool. Yeah, I'll do that. Anyway. So, basically, if these people are right, and the jet fuel is an actual scam, a hoax, you've had access to free energy all along, and you got it right now if you actually take the all the scientific little nuggets that we just talked about. Let's see, say click. Oh, okay, cool, yeah. All right, so if you take these scientific nuggets that we just mentioned and do some experiments. Think about this. If you didn't have a catalytic converter on that engine, and you was running that engine, then that wasted fuel would be going out the exhaust. That would make that exhaust flammable, if it isn't still, even after all that. So, if you backfired, you'd be shooting flames out the back of your car. And that probably wouldn't be a good idea because Granny driving behind you would probably see that big old super huge flame flying towards her windshield and panic and maybe hit a telephone pole and take down the power grid starting the apocalypse a few days early and stuff. And we wouldn't want that. So, if what they're saying is the truth about how the internal combustion engine works and the purpose of the catalytic converter to reburn waste exhaust to clean up your exhaust emissions. You know, reduce the whole carbon footprint thing. Yeah. Anyway, some of that fuel being brought back around into your engine intake to be reburned a second time around. So, using all the knowledge that is right there readily available, and turbo technology to compress air, there is no reason why you couldn't do the same exact thing that a scramjet would be doing, or a jet airplane would be doing, by quite literally, once you've got your engine up to operating temperature, bringing the rest of your fuel in from the outside. And then down and through that engine. Because if there's water vapor in the air, we all already know that water is hydrogen and oxygen. And so that compression and that temperature and cracking the water molecule apart because it's already vaporized into a fine little mist and such. And so now you're actually bringing your fuel along with you. Picking your fuel up on the way down the road. And quite literally, the exhaust fumes coming out of the car in front of you could be ran through your system as well. Now I know the technology is already there, but have it been underneath our nose all along in such a ridiculously simple fashion? And the industry knew it all along. Well, we could give them an idea how this thing works, but we can't tell them that, we're only using this much fuel and then we're picking the rest of it up as we're flying through the air. Can't tell them that because then they'll know that free energy is real. And we wouldn't want that to happen. It'd been better that free energy just remains to be a conspiracy theory. But anyway, and so they would come up with this plan. Okay, well, this is how we are able to put this much fuel in this plane by, you know, distributing it all over the plane so we can keep our center balance and all that kind of stuff. And by separating little compartments and bladders and stuff, we can keep the fuel from sloshing around and keep everything level and all that kind of stuff. Well, what would happen, hypothetically, if you were in that plane and for some reason, according to the way that system's designed, and the pumps went bad and it would no longer, something went bad and it would no longer allow fuel to either flow via gravity or be able to pump it from one end to the next, and suddenly that plane become off of balance. So if you ever made model airplanes, you know that center of balance is a really important thing, and so you've got to have it weighted just right in order to keep the wings in the right area so that it catches that wind and is able to lift that doggone model plane up. Otherwise, if it's off balance on one side, it'll just flip over and fall over and crash. So there's a whole lot that could go wrong in the system that they're talking about. And there's a whole lot of splaining to do, Lucy, when it comes to how you get that much fuel in there. And so it's worth investigating. So, if, you know, if it's just a conspiracy theory now, somebody go down to the nearest local jet airplane junkyard and, you know, do some inspection and see, you know, if it looks plausible. Do some measurements. Pick a tape measure around one of the wings and say, they could keep that much fuel in there, and this particular style metal would be sturdy enough to hold it, and, you know, put a case together for why it is that you'd be able to do that. You know, because the truth is what we're looking for, is what I'm understanding here. So if we can figure this out, if what they're saying is true about how we've been told things work, then, you know, okay, we can mark that conspiracy as, you know, debunked, whatever. But according to what NASA has explained about the gases that make up the Earth's atmosphere and just uses for hydrogen, uses for oxygen, uses for nitrogen, uses for argon, uses for carbon dioxide and helium and methane and krypton, as well as, I don't know why they throw that in there, because if you got hydrogen in there, what's the point of throwing water vapor in there? Because hydrogen is part of water vapor, which is also part of oxygen, so you're kind of like, you're putting it in there twice. You understand what I'm trying to say here. So nonetheless, if that conspiracy turns out to be like not a conspiracy, and that's really what they're doing, and if this ramjet is functioning the way that quite literally a diesel engine would function, with the exception is it doesn't have a piston, it's actually using the pressure at sonic speeds to ram that air inside there and basically force the issue, well, then a turbo could pretty much do the same thing to some extent, if not to at the very least supplement your fuel, which makes it more efficient. Just saying, that's that. So, let me see here. I'm going to click on this. I hope it ain't loud.
The turbofan engine is a complex synchronization of several components working together as two parts. A core section that produces power to drive the propulsor section that produces thrust. Thrust is a force created by the acceleration of air. This phenomenon is simply an application of Newton's second law of motion, commonly expressed as force equals mass times acceleration. It is this force that propels the aircraft. To see how this thrust is developed, let's look at the internal workings of Pratt & Whitney's PW4102 turbofan engine. The first component in the engine is the huge 9-foot diameter fan that rotates 2,800 times a minute at takeoff. This giant fan sucks in enough air to vacuum out the air in a 4-bedroom house in less than half a second. As the air races through the massive fan, it's separated into two streams. Only 15% of the air flows into the interior core of the engine,
The remaining 85% of the air is ducted along the outside of the core and is forced through an ever-narrowing space, the fan duct, picking up speed along the way. The ratio of this air bypassing the core to the air passing through the core is called the bypass ratio. Because of its huge volume, the bypassed air only needs to accelerate a small amount in order to develop an enormous amount of thrust. Meanwhile, the other 15% of the air has entered the first component in the engine's core, the low-pressure compressor. Here, the air passes through several smaller stages, each consisting of a set of rotating blades in between a set of stationary blades. Each stage compresses the air, forcing its temperature and pressure to rise. After passing through the low-pressure compressor, the air enters the high-pressure compressor, which rotates faster and is responsible for 70% of the total pressure rise. After the air has passed through both compressors, it is 35 times higher in pressure and 1,000 degrees hotter than the outside air. The compressed air is now at the right pressure, but it is moving too fast to be efficiently ignited, so it enters a diffuser, where it slows down while remaining at the optimum temperature and pressure. The air then enters the combustor, where its energy level is greatly increased. This is accomplished by adding fuel through a series of injectors and igniting it, further increasing the temperature of the mixture by 1600 degrees. The higher the pressure of the air, the more energy will be added during combustion and the more efficient this process becomes. This is why the compressors were used to increase the air's pressure. Now, the superheated and compressed air mixture is ready for the next phase. Blasting through the high-pressure turbine, the high-energy air spins the blades at over 10,000 revolutions per minute. These blades are connected to a shaft that runs through the center of the engine and drives the high-pressure compressor. In fact, the only purpose of the high-pressure turbine is to extract enough energy from the air to turn the high-pressure compressor. Together, these components make up the high spool. Next, the air passes through the larger low-pressure turbine. This turbine has two purposes. First, it extracts enough energy from the air to power the low-pressure compressor at the front of the engine core. These two components are connected via a second shaft, which actually passes through the center of the high spool. However, the second and more important job of the low-pressure turbine is to turn the large titanium fan blades up front. The fan is connected to the same shaft as the low-pressure compressor and low-pressure turbine. Together, these three components make up the low spool. Finally, the combusted air races out through the exhaust nozzle at the back of the engine to be accelerated one last time. The speed at which this gas exits the nozzle is called jet velocity. This exhaust stream produces only 20% of the engine's total thrust. The remaining 80% is produced by the large volume of accelerated bypass air exiting the fan duct.
Are you crazy? Alright, well, I'm hoping that somebody besides me, I know Stephen Gibbons probably got it because he's the one that actually posted that video link in there. I need to repost that in all three of these chat rooms over here. And if there's anybody listening over People for People Radio, maybe you might want to come over and grab up some of these links and check these out, send them around, and let people take a look at them and see what they think. But what he just explained there is that engine, that jet engine that he's got, the compressive technology inside there, is quite literally assisting itself mechanically. Via the way that the air is compressed and the way that the air is shifted down, and when it's going through the back end of this thing, it's actually turning a shaft, which is turning the big fan in front, which produces the majority of the thrust via the air that flies by the side right there. So it is quite a brilliant piece of technology. I mean, you want to talk about engineering, that is quite brilliant. So maybe all this time we've been going about this the wrong way when we're looking into on how to get
efficiency out of electricity. Maybe we don't need efficiency out of electricity. Maybe we can just waste all the electricity that we want by using this type of technology on the ground level. I mean, we don't need this thing to, produce as much thrust as necessary to actually push a plane that has supposedly 63,000, gallons of fuel in it, or 83 tons, I think it was. I can't even remember. It just gives me a headache trying to keep up with. But anyway, nonetheless, if you take this technology and you incorporate it into a ground-based generating system, you got more than enough thrust, power, torque, and everything to do what it is to need to do to turn a generator. And if you utilize that energy that you're pulling off of the generator in an efficient manner, instead of trying to make a direct connection to it, then you won't have that drag that would actually start to slow the process down. And you take that energy that you want off of it, store it, and use it in a different fashion than what we're doing now, you would have the most efficient, ridiculously simple to understand super generator in the history of time. We could quite literally build these things, and of course, you know, if you've ever stand next to an airport, there's a lot of noise being generated by, so you, if your neighbor's got a jet engine running their generator to run their house, and you hear that big old loud going on, and you're hollering out your window, you're like halfway hanging out of the second story window, and you're screaming across that sound to your neighbor, and you're like trying to say, "Are you crazy? Have you lost your ever loving mind? I'm trying to sleep over here. Turn that thing off." You know, there's ways to muffle that noise. We can make that thing do what it's doing and still make it run silent, you know. It's just, look, it's all about whether or not you want to take the time to understand and engineer something. These people, I just don't get it. I just don't get it. The power structures of the world, they just want to remain in power. They want to stay wealthy. They want to be the elite, so they have to have all the gold so they can make all the rules. And in the process of that, while they are doing what it is they're doing, not only are you getting robbed, but they're telling you secrets of their if I secretly know how to do magic and I tell everybody, then everybody knows how to do magic, and so suddenly we're on the same playing field, and they don't like that. So inadvertently, in trying to explain to us, so hopefully that we don't look into it any deeper, they will give us a little bit of truth or a little bit of misinformation to tell you, oh, well, this is how we're doing it, you know, and that don't sound plausible for us to be able to go out and afford 83,000 gallons. So, see, I don't remember what that one said, but it was like a gallon per second of diesel fuel that these things supposedly use, or jet fuel, sorry. But either way, that's a lot. That's a lot of fuel, and so they transfer that cost over into your wallet, so that you pay for them to be able to afford that much fuel and take you from point A to point B. And if you think about how many airplanes is actually in the air at any given time and flying here to and fro, there's a lot of money being made. And then the jet airline companies, they'll be saying, "Well, you know, we're working at a deficit. We're not making very much money. We're actually losing money, and we have to get government subsidies in order to keep our business open and stuff. Tax breaks or whatever." And everybody who is in the know knows it's all a scam from the start to finish. The whole deal from, I can get this company over here to dig coal out of the ground, and then we'll burn that in the coal fire power plants, and I can get this company over here to dig uranium up, and they'll refine it, and then they'll put it over here in these nuclear power plants, and I can get these people who's already got the infrastructure set up over here for the hydroelectric dam to produce electricity as well. Plus, we can use solar power and wind power and thermoelectrics from different portions of how we know the Earth functions itself. And so we'll get all this infrastructure into place, and we'll charge them and keep the myth going that we have this energy crisis, and there's a actual shortage of what we would classify as fossil fuel, which is the biggest hockahooey in the history of hockahooey. If you ever paid attention to whatever a hockahooey was to begin with, then you can go ask everybody and his brother who's standing anywhere in the remote vicinity of you. You can look them right straight in the eye, cross one of your eyes kind of sideways so that you look really intelligent when you say it, and then say, "Are you crazy? Have you lost your ever-loving mind? Have you gone mad?" I don't even know what the heck to say anymore. That, you know, I said I was going to prove 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt energy was free, and it's proved itself. Time and time and time again, it has proved itself over and over and over again. Basic science, if you had paid attention in basic science, and maybe, you know, if you had shop class and paid attention in mechanics or chemistry, and you actually listened to the words coming out of NASA's mouth, and according to NASA, the gases in the Earth's atmosphere are quite literally fuel. Yep. Quite literally. We are floating in a sea of fuel, according to NASA. So you can call me crazy. All right, and even you NASA groupies out there, you can call me crazy. But is NASA crazy? No actual science association, are they crazy? Never a straight answer, are they crazy? No, I'm just asking, because they said that nitrogen was at 78%, oxygen at 21%, argon at 0.93%, carbon dioxide at 0.04%, trace amounts of neon, helium, methane, krypton, and hydrogen, as well as water vapor. Huh. Well, we know that we can generate plasma with argon and helium and neon and methane, for that matter. Actually, generating plasma with methane would give you a plus, because methane is flammable. Krypton, more plasma, hydrogen, an implosive fuel, as well as water vapor, which is a combination of oxygen and hydrogen. So, there's a guy out there on YouTube. He does one video called Gasoline Hoax. And in his video, he's pretty much explaining that gasoline, the majority of what's actually being burnt is nitrogen from the air. So when you believe that you're just bringing oxygen into the intake in order to mix with the fuel, in order to give your fuel air mixture, your fuel air ratio, let's use that word racial, because that's important. That makes it sound more scientific. So you get your fuel air racial mixture going just perfect, and you get a good burn, and you know, you can drag race your car down the road and get a speeding ticket if you like, or you can do it on the racetrack where they let you get by with it to some extent. So anyway, if this particular guy is right, that it's the nitrogen in the air as opposed to the oxygen that is actually doing the majority of the combustion portion, is actually helping it to burn better, then we've been doing it all along. You got an air breather, and you can suck big particles of dirt, and they'll stick in the air filter and keep that stuff out of the deal, but it will also allow, at the same time, oxygen and nitrogen and all the other mixtures of the atmosphere to be able to go through the air breather and then down into there to mix with the fuel and then give you a burn. so that you can run your vehicle down the road. So quite literally, all the way back to the invention of the automobile itself, we had quite literally been picking up fuel on the way. Otherwise, if none of these gases from the outside, we may have to have a fuel tank that may be multitudes times larger than the actual onboard fuel tank as is. If that was where we were getting our only source of fuel, then it might take a heck of a lot more fuel in order to keep that thing doing what it is that it's doing. It's just something that if anybody's interested would have to do the mathematical calculations and try to contemplate on what it would actually take to run the vehicle if you weren't pulling the some of the energy out of the atmosphere on your way through. The internal combustion engine wastes all kinds of energy via heat. I mean, that engine will get hot if you take away the cooling system and do not allow, you know, the wind to blow through and take away some of that heat, you know, then that engine will quite literally destroy itself because it's using so much energy and it's producing so much energy, even though it's calculations of how much fuel input that you're putting in it is so incredibly inefficient that we're wasting more fuel than we're using. But in the air industry, aeronautics, is that what that word would be? What is that word? Anyway, those folks that deal in jet airplanes and all that, whatever terminology that turns out to be. My brain hurts because I'm sitting there trying to explain the simplicity of the ridiculousness that we're being told and the possibilities of what could be utilized or accomplished if we just took some of these little nuggets of information and put them together in the right pieces of the puzzle. We could quite literally design automobiles that would be so ridiculously efficient and pick up their fuel as you're going down the road as opposed to going to the gas station every, you know, so many miles because, you know, they're running inefficient and you're wasting more fuel than you're actually using. You know, that's the whole deal. But no matter what I say, you know, I'm not NASA. I'll give you a straight answer. And I will use actual science. I wonder if there's already an ASA, Actual Science Association. If not, somebody look out there and see if there is actually an ASA, an Actual Science Association. Because I might have to start up my own. I'll be the founder of the Actual Science Association. If it doesn't already exist, I'll be the one to step up and say, we're going to actually use science, real science. Not that crazy stuff. Not the hoodoo voodoo version of science. And, you know, from that point on, we can actually start taking real science and using all the knowledge and technology available to us to build efficient machines to quite literally release people from the bondage of the ridiculous system that we find ourselves ensnared in. You know, if people didn't have to pay so much on their utility bills and their fuel bills for, you know, traveling and farming and all this kind of stuff, imagine where the rest of those funds could go. Not only would their quality of life be better, but they would be able to uplift other people's qualities of life by, you know, showing them how to be efficient like that. Show them how to basically work in harmony with what nature has already given us. You know, the information's right there. Right now, the world is sitting in front of a buffet of information. And those folks that are willing to step outside the box and think outside the box, be a free thinker, those are the folks that I'd like to put together the dream team. Those are the folks that you need to find in your area and put together the dream team to take and test these theories and technologies and all these kind of stuff to see what this would do with that and so on down the line. Folks, there ain't no reason why we couldn't use the same type of technology on the ground that they actually use up in the air if indeed the conspiracy theories are correct and that jet fuel is actually a hoax. And even if it isn't a hoax, even if they really do use that much fuel in the airplane. The technology is still quite amazing and can be repurposed into all kinds of different deals. I've actually watched people make electric jets for RC remote control airplanes. Remote control jets running off of electricity. Now, if it's got that much thrust to actually push that plane and do the things that it does, then it also has thrust to do work. So just think, if you're able to compress the air, heat it up, then you're going to have thermal electric capabilities. If you're able to use that those fans in the configuration that they do to produce the amount of thrust that they are, you will be able to turn turbines, which in turn would turn rotors, which in turn would turn electrical generators. And if you used a little bit of knowledge on how a starter generator functioned and you actually got this thing up to speed, that it actually overcome the necessary RPMs for the motor to actually draw electricity from the battery, then that would mean that any power that came from that, because now the engine's moving faster than the electric motor, now that motor becomes a generator and is quite literally generating electricity, recharging the battery that was needed to actually get the thing up to speed to begin with. Now it's up to operating temperature, and you can maintain that temperature using technologies such as induction heating, which basically use like ZBS type drivers. You know, it's a high frequency using either MOSFETs or transistors to send a frequency in there, and as fast as those frequencies are moving, such as how a microwave rocks the water molecule so rapidly that it produces friction, which in turn produces heat and cooks your food, it will also do the same thing in electrical wire, in copper, metal, and any other type. See, most heater systems in this world work off of a resistive type of current-resisting flow of electricity. Well, you don't have to have a current-resisting, so if you don't have to have the current-resisting portion of the deal where you have to generate a lot of current, and this current is actually being resisted, which causes the generator have to work 10 times harder than it would otherwise, if you were just using a frequency range at which it would cause the doggone wire to quite literally vibrate to the extent, just like your engine, part of the heat losses in your engine is because that engine is vibrating, which is producing friction, which in turn is producing heat and causing it to get hot. So science says heat is light and light is heat, vice versa. So if you can get an element to vibrate rapidly enough to produce the heat that would cause it to produce light, now you not only have a light source that is using a low power input at a high frequency output, and since you're not going to be trying to pull a lot of current from it, you don't need all the current watts and amps kind of issue like I got in trouble and lost a lot of friends because I said I don't care about current watts and amps because what I'm trying to show you doesn't require a significant amount of current watts and amps. The system that's set up is so incredibly inefficient, current watts and amps would apply. And if people would just take the time to understand what it is that I'm trying to say to them, you can generate plasma with milliamps. You don't need a whole lot of amperage, a whole lot of wattage, and a whole lot of current. You can do it with milliamps. Transistors and MOSFETs, and heck, you can do it with a rotary switch like I was talking about building. You can do it with a commutator. I mean, they used to do it back in the old days with the distributor systems, and they would have that doggone distributor spinning around, shooting an arc across, pulsing a coil every so often. You pulse that coil, and the fly back off of that coil shoots across the spark gap and has to have a doggone condenser on there to absorb some of that energy so that it doesn't burn your points out of the distributor. If you have to have somewhere to drain the power off, then that means you're getting too much power. If it's not necessary to have that much power and you have to drain some of it off, then that ought to tell you something. That process generates too much power, so we got to figure out a way to bleed that power off. Oh, my Lord. I'll tell you. And people wonder why I call it mad science. Because it really, quite literally, aggravates the ever-loving bleepity-bleep out of me, man. It gets me, it makes my head hurt. NASA has all this funding, and they are doing amazing things. See, that's where I give them credit on. They are doing amazing things. They are amazingly ripping the general population in the world off of money and saying that they're doing it for, you know, space and technology. When at the same sense, if you're a NASA engineer and you can't explain what I just explained to the people in simplicity like that, that you're quite literally looking at free energy, and just and that's just one form, folks. That doesn't even scratch the surface. Free energy comes in all so many different types of form because you're quite literally floating in a sea of fuel. That's it. And that's not even explaining electricity. Everything that makes up our atmosphere is fuel. Everything that makes up the ocean is fuel. And that doesn't even get into lightning. You're listening to Shaziz Radio and People for People Radio and TCT Radio and all the other affiliated networks. And we are now the Actual Science Association. Because common sense dictates if, you know, this is what they're claiming, that this is what our deal is. And we paid attention in science class that the, according to NASA, the gases of the Earth's atmosphere include 78% nitrogen, 21% oxygen, 0.93% argon, carbon dioxide at 0.04%. That must be in the parts per million thing, man. Ooh. Trace amounts of neon, helium, methane, krypton, and hydrogen, as well as water vapor. So I'm sitting here telling you that at the air that you're breathing right now is fuel. How else would your body do what it does? Your body's a thermoelectric generator. It's an amazing piece of machinery. It can breathe in oxygen, and it can feed your body with oxygen and everything else necessary. And then by the intake of the food that you put in, you know, you can get that food to make, you know, all the energy necessary to do all the chemical processes in your body. And I think they said you can only go like 3 days without water, and then your body begins to shut down. And you can only go for so long, maybe a week or so, without food before your body begins to waste away. But everything from the oxygen to the water to the food, nature has already provided a free source of energy. If your body starts to feel like it's running down, you can run outside and you can forage on the land that you're standing on and you can find edibles that will fill up your fuel tank, and you can breathe in the oxygen that nature provided that will keep your chemical processes going. And everything that you need, including when you need to shut your engine down for a while and lay down and rest, has been provided for you. There's a ground, you can lay on the ground if you ain't worried about creepy crawlies. And so, actually, nature even provided things that you can lay on the ground that bugs don't like and snakes don't like. And you can make you a bed that you can lay on the ground that would keep all the bugs away from you. So nature's actually provided protection as far as that goes, too. Certain plants chase away mosquitoes. So we got all this knowledge, all this technology, all these years of vast sums of all man's knowledge. My friend Simply Steve said up there at the very tip top of the website that he put together. says, nature needs no improvement. Only the arrogance of man requires change. And that's true, because nature has provided every single thing necessary. And from all of our understanding and our learning of everything and our technologies and all that kind of stuff, we have every single answer to resolve every single so-called problem in the history of time. We've got it right now. And the whole key is waiting around for the people to finally recognize what they're standing in before it's too late. You got access to everything. Right now you have... You're right in front of you. If you're listening in on a computer or a cell phone, you have technology available to do amazing research. You can find it in an instant. And if you take that knowledge and you take your team and you get together with some tools, you know, if you ain't got all the tools necessary, your friend's got that particular tool, or you, whatever, you all pull your resources and you buy that tool, we can start engineering machines that would run on pure distilled water, or just pull the fuel right out of the air itself. And everybody's like, oh, well, no, you can't put jet engines around everybody's house. You'll be causing tornadoes and all that kind of stuff. Oh, man. Come on. Give me a headache. Because for every problem that you can come up with, there's a solution. Every problem. There ain't one problem on this planet that you could not come up with a solution. And even the problem, the only major problem that there seems to be no solution to is how to get this message out into the average Joe through all the indoctrination and through all the government trolls and shills and just flat out knuckleheads, NASA's groupies, and all the people who have been told for so long that free energy is not free. There's no such thing as free energy. How do you get this information past all them knuckleheads into working devices and put it out there and show them what it is that you're talking about? And even if they were standing there looking at it, if they were standing in front of the holy grail of a perpetual motion free energy machine, they would still deny it and praise NASA as the almighty God. Praise the scientists of the mainstream as the lords of all knowledge. The ridiculousness that we have to endure on a daily basis because of the mainstream scientists and the failures of NASA to be upfront and honest about money that they spent that came from our hard works and pockets and so on and so forth. If the knowledge was placed out there on the table, there is no reason why this entire world should be at war with one another for resources. There's no reason for anybody to be hungry. There's no reason for anybody to be homeless. And there is definitely no reason for anybody to do without energy that would keep them warm when they need to be warm and cool when they need to be cool. And there is absolutely 150 bazillion times beyond a shadow of a doubt no reason why anyone on this planet should ever die of thirst. There is no way physically possible that you can run out of any material on this planet. Everything is recycled back into the system. Everything, including you. This system, this wonderful planet or flat plane or whatever you believe it is a self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. It's a thermal electric generator of amazing proportions. There's electricity in the air. There's electricity in the ground. There's heat in the ground. There's wind. There's water. There's all kinds of stuff. Everything that you're living in a sea of free energy, and yet you can't get nobody to put things together that would utilize all that for the benefit of all of humanity without either A, wanting to rush to the patent office and try to fill their bank account so that they could become one of the elite wealthy individuals? You know, Tesla tried to give free energy to the world. J.P. Morgan shut him down. And other people stole ideas from him. Pretty much claimed them for themselves. Every single inventor out there that's ever tried to step forward and give everybody the knowledge that you've already been given on multiple occasions but decided to overlook because you just simply couldn't understand the simplicity of the design or what it is that they were trying to tell you that stepped outside of the actual school book and the indoctrination system. If the mainstream science says, well, then it can't be true. If the laws of physics say, then it can't be true. Well, I'm telling you, it's all pure ridiculousness when you paid attention in science class and you take that information that you got between science and their own laws of physics and the slip-ups of NASA telling everybody that, quite literally, you're living in a sea of fuel. And I've read it out so many times, you have to go out and read it out yourself. Just Google it, gases that make up the atmosphere, and you can read it ad nauseum until it like sinks into your head what you just read. But once you absorb that in there and you absorb what it is that the biggest portion, which is nitrogen, is actually capable of, things that can be done with nitrogen. Nitrogen is important to the chemistry, particularly to the chemical industry. It is used to make fertilizers. We need that for growing food. It's used to make nitric acid. So we Google up what nitric acid's good for. Nylon? Well, that's pretty cool. I've seen some nylon rope that's pretty doggone sturdy. Dyes? Well, that makes you can color your clothes and stuff like that, or all kinds of stuff. Explosives. Don't need to be blowing stuff up, but nonetheless, explosives. Inside your internal combustion engine, there is either an implosion or an explosion going on at any given time. Unless you're actually running a diesel engine, which kind of runs a little bit different, but at some extent still kind of falls back into the internal combustion where it's actually got sort of an explosion going on. Depends on how hot it gets. And to hydrogen to, it must be, back up here. To make these products, nitrogen must first be reacted with hydrogen to produce ammonia. There's things about ammonia that you might want to know. They actually used to have air conditioners that used ammonia. Imagine that. Anyway, moving right along. This is done by the Haber process. You'll have to Google that as well, because I don't want to go into that again. I don't like the Haber process. Drives me nuts. Anyway, so if what they're saying is true, then we've had free energy all along. If what NASA's saying is true, we've had free energy all along. If what basic science states, and even the laws of physics for that matter, we've had free energy all along. If what I've been saying all this time and everything we've been pointing out in all different directions, then quite literally, we have had free energy all along. We got enough on this planet to feed multitudes times more of the population that we are right now. But people will tell you that the Earth is overpopulated. And we have everything necessary to not only feed them, to house them, to give them medicines that they need and heal the sick and all that kind of stuff. We have the technologies on how to build homes that will withstand all of the what nature has to offer and work in perfect harmony. If you live near a floodplain, don't fear because your house will float and it'll do it in a safe and stable manner. We have that technology. And if you live near Hurricane Alley or Tornado Alley or whatever, then don't worry. We know the geometrical shapes best to make that would quite literally allow the wind forces to wrap around and go on by without even without even affecting us. We have these technologies. We have the knowledge on how to make things last for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. And just by simple maintenance, we could take care of the things that we got, and we would have to not waste resources around the world. And if we did decide we still wanted to use the so-called fossil fuel, diesel, or whatever, gasoline, crude oil, if we decided we still want to use them for certain chemical things, we could still use them. Or, even in the engines, if we still wanted to make hot rods, we could do it. And we could take the engines and make them so ridiculously efficient that you hardly even have to pay for fuel, man. Maybe you just make your own fuel. You go to the the shop and you buy you a soda pop. And you drink all the soda out of it, and now you got a plastic bottle, and you're like, well, what am I going to do with that? Well, you put it into this recycler, which basically heats it up and breaks it down into its natural materials, which if you go take a peek at where all these types of plastics come from, you might be amazed at what you can actually do with plastic. And now you bring it down to the right temperature where you quite literally refine it, and now you use that trash for fuel instead of throwing it in the garbage and ending up in the landfill. As a matter of fact, using that particular technology, people would actually start going out digging in the trash to get free fuel. And they would probably even go to the dumps, and at some point in time, the dumps would say, well, if you take all of our trash away, we won't be a dump anymore. Well, that's all right. We need some fuel. So they might actually start trying to sell their trash to you. You might be able to find a industry to where whenever you go buy a soda bottle and you're done with the contents inside there, you could go by the recycling place and they'll buy that bottle from you right now because they know what they can do with it. See, the industry is doing the supply and demand that are making it hard for everybody else because plastic, it's so abundant. Oh, we got all this plastic, and look, it's clogging up the doggone deal. But, this guy over here, we don't want him talking to people because he's telling people you can use this plastic for fuel or you could recycle it into usable products and stuff. If you look around, people have done it. There's information available on how to do it. But nonetheless, the implications are limitless. The capabilities of what you have at your disposal right now as the people of Earth are mind-blowing. And I get it. There's certain reasons why we don't do things. There's a reason why we don't have a self-charging electrical car. There's a reason why Stan Myers come up against the wall, against all odds, to show people how to run a car on water. Joseph Newman, John Bedini, Nikola Tesla, and all the other brilliant researchers that you've heard throughout the entirety of all this deal have quite literally shown you that there are so many different ways to utilize energy that nature has already provided, that there are so many different uses for what you would classify as to now be garbage. When you burn firewood, you make new products, one of which is what they call creosote that builds up in your chimney, and then you go out and buy another product to basically neutralize the creosote in your chimney because that creosote is flammable, aka fuel. And if you don't clean it out, then it will build up and cause a chimney fire, and in worst case scenario, it'll actually cause your chimney to explode. Literally. And in the process of burning it and producing yet even more fuel, you also produce wood ash, which in turn can be used for many things. Let's see. I'm going to Google this. Here we go again. 10 uses for wood ash. Alright. There's just a few. This is 10 uses for wood ash. They say that you can use wood ash to de-skunk pets. A handful rug on Fido's coat neutralizes the lingering odor of a skunk spray on your pet. They say that you can use wood ash to hide stains on your pavement, such as, like, you know, your vehicle's leaking oil and it's grease and stuff and it's staining it. So they're saying you can actually, you know, use wood ash to basically hide it. They say that you can use wood ash to enrich compost. They say that you can use wood ash to block garden pests. They say that you can use wood ash to melt ice. They say that you can use wood ash to control pond algae. They say that you can use wood ash to pump up tomatoes, aka nitrogen, fertilizer in the soil. They say that you can use wood ash to clean glass fireplace doors. Those are just 10. And I'm sure there are more out there. I know that you can use wood ash to make lye soap. Yeah. If you know any uses for wood ash, post them in the chat room down there for people. So essentially what we just explained is you took and you burned the firewood for fuel in order to use the heat. Some of the heat got lost out into the atmosphere, so you were producing more energy than you could actually use, or you could have used it had you just guided it in a different manner what you did. But in the process of burning the firewood and producing the wood ash and the creosote that built up in the top of the chimney and stuff, you just produced another fuel and more useful products. That even once you dump it out into nature, nature takes and uses it as well. According to the laws of physics, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where does it go? Dad, burn it. I've been called everything under the sun. I've been called ignorant, stupid, and fear-monger, and all kinds of ridiculousness. Just for stating the blatantly obvious that whenever I paid attention in science class, this is what science taught me. I paid attention to nature, and I learned. I learned a lot. I see how nature does stuff. And I see how nature uses energy. See how a bird can fly and a bee can fly and all this kind of stuff. And when I look at a scramjet and how it works, I'm amazed. They said at one point we might actually be going 6,000 miles an hour. Wow. Necessarily know that we need to go 6,000 miles an hour. But I tell you what, I need a breather. So I'm going to try to pull up pretty much the first song that I can find. And I'm just going to throw a tune on there. And I'm going to go get me some coffee. And if anybody listening in wants to join in on the radio show, hit me up on Skype and I'll add you to the phone call, and then we'll polish off the last hour of the Mad Science Show. Because I'm just getting started getting rowdy. So with that said, you're listening to Mad Science, folks. Stay tuned. Don't panic. We got this thing. And so with that said, I'm going to take a quick music break.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
are the voyagers of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, could you describe the ruckus, sir? Well, you know, I like that song by Lynyrd Skynyrd, Free Bird, because not only does it give me plenty of time to sit back and catch my breath, but it also has a lot of free energy in it, man. I love that song, especially that guitar solo. Pretty amazing stuff. So anyway, folks, if you get an opportunity, jump over there and visit with the People for People Radio. The link is underneath in the superchat.html over at shazizradio.com. It's right down there, a little banner says People for People Radio on there. Ooh, that's got that little extra noise in there. Maybe I should have left that noise, but I don't know. Did you? How you doing, Two Dog? I see you over there, brother. Two Dog's awesome, man. Anyway, so basically, I started off asking everybody, are you crazy? Are you crazy? Have you lost your ever-loving mind? You know, been trying to tell people about free energy for a long time. Been trying to share with them all kinds of nuggets of truth and information and science, and trying to explain it to them in the simplest fashion possible so that everybody can understand what was going on. We all know that the governments and the corporations of the world, they want to keep certain things secret, because if they don't, you know, if everybody knows it, you can't sell a widget if everyone has a widget. You know, like one of them door stops, little wedge of, it was an ingenious idea that somebody came up with. If everybody owned a door stop, then there was no reason to go out and buy a door stop, because they really never, you know, go bad. And if they do go bad for some crazy reason, you just, you know, cut your own wedge and stick it underneath the door, and it keeps your door from, if you want to leave the door open, you know. Let the heat out, some of that free energy. So anyway, they got obvious reasons why they don't want everybody to have the knowledge of whatever technology is available out there. And if indeed the conspiracy is right that jet fuel is a hoax, a scam, or whatever, that they don't really use as much fuel as they're saying, then that would tell you that you're one step closer to free energy. And if you look at how the explanation of how these things work, I might just go ahead and play that video one more time that Stephen Gibbons posted in the chat room. I think I'm going to do that. And try not to get lost in the technicality of it, but listen to what's being said.
The turbofan engine is a complex synchronization of several components working together as two parts. A core section that produces power to drive the propulsor section that produces thrust. Thrust is a force created by the acceleration of air. This phenomenon is simply an application of Newton's second law of motion, commonly expressed as force equals mass times acceleration. It is this force that propels the aircraft. To see how this thrust is developed, let's look at the internal workings of Pratt & Whitney's PW4102 turbofan engine. The first component in the engine is the huge 9-foot diameter fan that rotates 2,800 times a minute at takeoff. This giant fan sucks in enough air to vacuum out the air in a 4-bedroom house in less than half a second. As the air races through the massive fan, it's separated into two streams. Only 15% of the air flows into the interior core of the engine. The remaining 85% of the air is ducted along the outside of the core and is forced through an ever-narrowing space, the fan duct, picking up speed along the way. The ratio of this air bypassing the core to the air passing through the core is called the bypass ratio. Because of its huge volume, the bypassed air only needs to accelerate a small amount in order to develop an enormous amount of thrust. Meanwhile, the other 15% of the air has entered the first component in the engine's core, the low-pressure compressor. Here, the air passes through several smaller stages, each consisting of a set of rotating blades in between a set of stationary blades. Each stage compresses the air, forcing its temperature and pressure to rise. After passing through the low-pressure compressor, the air enters the high-pressure compressor, which rotates faster and is responsible for 70% of the total pressure rise. After the air has passed through both compressors, it is 35 times higher in pressure and 1,000 degrees hotter than the outside air. The compressed air is now at the right pressure, but it is moving too fast to be efficiently ignited, so it enters a diffuser, where it slows down while remaining at the optimum temperature and pressure. The air then enters the combustor, where its energy level is greatly increased. This is accomplished by adding fuel through a series of injectors and igniting it, further increasing the temperature of the mixture by 1600 degrees. The higher the pressure of the air, the more energy will be added during combustion and the more efficient this process becomes. This is why the compressors were used to increase the air's pressure. Now, the superheated and compressed air mixture is ready for the next phase. Blasting through the high-pressure turbine, the high-energy air spins the blades at over 10,000 revolutions per minute. These blades are connected to a shaft that runs through the center of the engine and drives the high-pressure compressor. In fact, the only purpose of the high-pressure turbine is to extract enough energy from the air to turn the high-pressure compressor. Together, these components make up the high spool. Next, the air passes through the larger low-pressure turbine. This turbine has two purposes. First, it extracts enough energy from the air to power the low-pressure compressor at the front of the engine core. These two components are connected via a second shaft, which actually passes through the center of the high spool. However, the second and more important job of the low-pressure turbine is to turn the large titanium fan blades up front. The fan is connected to the same shaft as the low-pressure compressor and low-pressure turbine. Together, these three components make up the low spool. Finally, the combusted air races out through the exhaust nozzle at the back of the engine to be accelerated one last time. The speed at which this gas exits the nozzle is called jet velocity. This exhaust stream produces only 20% of the engine's total thrust. The remaining 80% is produced by the large volume of accelerated bypass air exiting the fan duct.
So, for those of you that have a mechanical mind, if you paid attention to this deal, I'm going to go ahead and post it over at People for People. I'm going to post this link, if I can find the doggone deal now. There it is. I think. Nope, that's the wrong one. Try this one over here. Yay! Okay, for you folks over there, People for People, I'm posting this link in there to the video you just heard. And if you sit there and you watch as this man explains to you how this thing is actually functioning, you'll realize that the engine has a portion of it that actually assists itself in the process of doing the job of actually running the engine. So it's pretty amazing that as the bypass air is flowing by this thing, it has another one down there that has another section of air that's being compressed, and it has a low pressure turbines, which is turning another shaft, which is actually going back the other direction, which is turning the main blade on the thing that is actually causing the vacuum being produced from the outside to bring in the high pressure bypass air that is actually assisting the engine. So the harder you run this engine, the more power it produces. So utilizing technology such as that, mechanical wise, and the knowledge of what NASA said that the Earth's atmosphere was made up, 70% nitrogen, 21% oxygen, argon at 0.93%, and carbon dioxide at 0.04%, trace amounts of neon, helium, methane, krypton, hydrogen, as well as water vapor. Once you get this thing up to operating temperature, if you was using it on the ground and you wanted to get it up operating temperature, I mean, there's so many different ways you could use a turbo, electric turbo, to get it up to operating temperature by compressing that air. Everybody knows that when you compress a gas or such as air, that it causes it to get hot. So we actually have the technology available that work on actual cars in order to produce the heat. And induction heating, as far as you're wrapping a coil of wire around something, and inside it, the strength of that magnetic field actually causes whatever ferrous metal in between it to get hot. And so you can regulate the temperature using electricity that you could in turn generate by same said material or same said machine, and be able to use the air pressure, the mixture of air from the actual atmosphere itself, plus everything that's functioning in conjunction with each other. You could quite literally build a jet engine that would sit on the ground and generate electricity. And if utilized properly in electricity, you can reduce the efficiency, the lack of efficiency to such. You can make this thing so incredibly efficient that instead of invoking lens effect and you know, all the other things that we know, and utilizing all of thermal dynamics to our benefit as opposed to why it is that something can't be done. And even sonic vaporization technology with, if you're living in a dry climate or whatever where you don't have the humidity in order for, you know, to get more water molecules or vapor or whatever, you can use sonic vaporization technology to, once this thing is hot and it's up to temperature, then you can actually turn on the sonic water vaporizer, which will put a really super fine mist up in front of there. And that as soon as that water hits that hot material, according to science, water will expand 1,600 times its volume when it is superheated into steam. So now you basically could take and put your fuel in from outside, just allow that water vapor to go up in front of this deal. And if you're not putting it up to the extreme to cause you know, this thing to cool down too fast, you regulate how much you're actually allowing to be sucked into the doggone machine, you could get this thing to run from any water source. Have the thing sitting next to a waterfall, and just the mist off the waterfall is enough fuel to run the entire deal. There you go, man. Are you crazy? Am I crazy? We must be crazy, because we're still paying the man for energy that nature has provided in such a ridiculous abundance, a ludicrous amount of energy. You're floating in quite literally a sea of fuel. And no matter how much or how hard you try, you could never get rid of all the water on this planet. You could never get rid of all the fuel on this planet. You could never get rid of all the resources on this planet. You could use them inefficiently. I mean, however you believe that the this planet would come to exist, whatever, whoever created this planet right now basically was a genius, brilliance of quite literally epic proportions. So, I'm saying we got every single thing necessary to resolve every single issue of, under the sun. Now it's just a matter of getting people together to the table. You know, we have shows like the Knights of the Round Table where we invite people to come to share, you know, the stories with one another. And, you know, there's other networks affiliated that have other motivational shows and shows that will... you know, try to bring your energies together to do positive things towards the world. We have everything necessary to resolve every single problem under the sun. It's up to us to decide we want to take that path or not. You know, you can't force people into doing things. But you can point it out that, you know, if there supposedly is a complaint against, you know, something that's going wrong at the plant, if you need to save the trees, then you shouldn't be out protesting with a wooden stick and a paper sign. That's common sense. If you want to save the planet, then maybe you might not want to be trashing it. You know, and so if you take this this knowledge that you've acquired and you put it into the pieces of the puzzle into the right order, then you can work in perfect harmony with nature. That's what I've been saying all along. And if you're one of those science trolls out there, one of them NASA groupies who always got to go out there and try to knock somebody's ideas, oh, no, that's not possible, that violates the laws of thermodynamics. First off, you need to understand the laws of thermodynamics before you actually even start quoting them. Don't try to misquote them to me to try to prove to me that energy is not free. You don't know what you're talking about. Quite simply, you didn't pay attention in science class. Now, they say that perpetual motion is not possible in a closed-loop system. Well, what if it ain't a closed-loop system? What if you're using outside forces that nature's already provided, such as you got wind as a supplement, you got solar as a supplement, you got thermal as a supplement, you got hydroelectrics as a supplement? You got all kinds of things going on in nature that would produce more than enough power to run everything it is that we're running right now and then some for the next thousands and thousands and thousands, if not trillions of years, and never, ever run out of anything. But if you're one of those NASA groupies out there, those people telling everybody that things can't be done, or if you're part of the global elite or the corporations and you're trying to convince people that, you know, this can't be done or whatever. Stan Myers back in 1979 was driving around in a dune buggy running on water. There's nobody who can debunk that because it was actual fact. It was on TV. Everybody saw it. Everybody knew it existed, but suddenly it went by the wayside. They said hydrogen technology couldn't be used, and then they turned around and used it anyway. And even the military said by the year 2016 or so that they would be running the Navy ships on, hydrogen technology? There are hydrogen cell technologies, and some people try to use the electrolysis process as an excuse why not. Oh, it takes too much energy to separate the hydrogen and oxygen molecule. Yeah, right. That's because you didn't pay attention. Electrolysis is by far the most inefficient manner in which to separate hydrogen and oxygen. Whereas water is the most stable molecule on the planet and probably the most abundant molecule on the planet, then, if you understand what happens to water in certain circumstances, like you put heat underneath it and it begins to boil rapidly, and then once it boils rapidly, it actually begins to vaporize into steam. And so now it's no longer a liquid, it is now a gas which can be compressed. And under certain circumstances, you could run that compressed gas, atomize it, vaporize it, put it in small quantities, and be able to still compress it and separate it and ignite it using compression, ignition, and so on. And using thermodynamics, you could actually use the same fuel to cool the system down by putting too much fuel into the system. If you understood how an internal combustion engine works, you should understand that the harder you push on that gas pedal, the less fuel that you should have to use. It shouldn't take as much fuel. And I believe that if these conspiracy theorists are right, and what they're saying is right, and you look into it and you find out that they're not using as much fuel in these jet engines as possible, then the industry knew it as well. And so with that said, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. Because you're floating in it. Literally. Your body's made up of energy. And everything out there in this world that is made of any kind of carbon base or water base or whatever type of material is quite literally fuel. That's it. And we can build perfect machines. We have the technology to quite literally build perfect efficiency machines that will last, stand the test of time. So, let me see here. What do we got? Stephen Gibbons posted a link into the super chat room. It's a U.S. patent, fusion power generator system. An approach 10 is provided as a way of obtaining useful power from fusion reaction utilizing lightweight isotopes of hydrogen and helium. A potential well is created between two accelerating electrodes. 26 that in the vacuum allows ions to form sources, 24 to be captured by the potential well, and actual magnetic field is as created by a solenoid, 20 causes the captured ions to pass through and focus the region, 22, and thus allowing fusion reactions to make anyway. Somebody else just go over there and read that. But I'll tell you what, exactly what they're talking about is basically explaining how you can quite literally produce a sun inside a vacuum using plasma technology. So, you know, when it talks about fusion and all that kind of stuff, it's not rocket science. It seems like it is, but it's not. You see plasma in basically fluorescent bulbs, neon lighting systems. There's so many different little argon, neon, helium, all these different noble gases out there can be energized into the fourth state of matter being plasma. And science says that light is heat and heat is light, vice versa. So that means that you get a two for one. You put an input, and if you're not trying to draw current and instead you're doing it in the milliamp range with a high frequency waveform that you're sending in there, you can energize gas into the fourth state of matter and get light and heat at the same exact time and do it so incredibly efficient and basically replicate what was made back in the late 1800s with the mercury arc rectifier, which wasn't as efficient because it was using a pull of mercury that it was vaporizing into a gas, then in turn energizing into the fourth state of matter being plasma. So they, aka they were able to rectify Tesla's high voltage AC into high voltage DC to run Edison's elevator motors. And that technology was around in the late 1800s. So I don't know what more to say that hasn't been said already. The only thing I ask of anybody out there, I'll come talk with anybody who wants to talk about it. I'll join you on your radio shows. Gather groups of environmentalists. I'll come talk to them. Machinists, anybody, engineering, I'll come talk to them. And I'll tell them the same thing I'm telling everybody. The only thing I ask anybody to do for me is to share these podcasts. Share this information. Because until, for some reason, until everybody decides to figure out to come together is the only way we're ever going to get anything accomplished in this world, then we're going to be under the thumb of the man, so to speak. We're going to be under that crazy system that we all seem to despise. And it's crazy because a friend of mine, I guess it's his birthday out there today. Hadn't heard from him for a long time, but he's, I'm not going to mention no names, but he's one of the ones that I got in a fight over current watts and amps. Caused one heck of a ruckus. Caused a ripple all the way down the dream team. Because what the book said, he wasn't willing to let go of that. You can't do it without current watts and amps is what the fight was all about. And what I was trying to explain at the time is because of the technology that I was trying to show people, because of the type of research that I was doing, it didn't require a significant amount of current watts and amps to do the job that I was trying to show people how to do as far as moving energy from point A to point B in a rapid and efficient manner. When you energize a noble gas into the fourth state of matter, you get light, you get heat, you get radiant energy, and if utilized properly at the right frequencies, you can store this energy. You can utilize this energy and you can do it in a safe manner as to if there was anything that went wrong and the glass exploded, you don't have a radioactive material being spewed all over the place. But the whole process that I were talking about, that I was trying to explain them when I kept telling them I do not care about current watts and amps. Those are standard measurements for the existing system, and I'm trying to show people how to use energy that we know is electricity in a completely different fashion. It's still the same energy. It's either moving faster or it's moving slower. That's the frequency of it. It's still the same amount of power, because they said energy can neither be created nor can it be destroyed, so it's still there. They didn't create it. I didn't destroy it. I just moved it and changed it and did exactly what the laws of physics said could be done. And for that, I lost some friends. And this is the problem. This is why we find ourselves in the same predicament year after year. This is why the world isn't running around saying, I ain't paying the electric bill because I already know how to generate electricity for free. It's there. And it's ready for the taking, and it's up to you to decide that you want it. And yeah, you're going to have to either buy some machines or find somebody to have machines and build machines, utilizing all the knowledge. All this, it's so ridiculously simple, it's ludicrous. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. All you have to do is pay attention to what basic science has already provided. All you got to do is pay attention to what nature's already provided. You don't need some scam artist like Keshi out there trying to tell you hoodoo voodoo stuff where you got to love your reactor or you, if you're a jerk, you don't get free electricity. No, this is already proven. Science. Real science. And exactly what we've been using all along, but using it in a better and more efficient manner. To benefit all of humanity instead of some of humanity. There's no need to go over there and fight other nations for oil. There's no need to go over and fight for coal or water resources. If you decide you want peace and love and harmony on the earth, it's up to you, the people out there, to take it. And the only thing I ask for my participation is this, is just a simple request that you share this information with somebody else. That's it. If they want to question it or they want to debate it, then send them over. Tell them to join me at the superchat.html or over there peopleforpeople.com. peopleforpeople.ning.com. Go over there and visit those people. Those are wonderful individuals over there. And the Super Chat, you got 4 chat rooms. You got access to get a hold of me on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, all these different social media platforms, which I share information with in the hopes that people will share the information as well. And guys like Stephen Gibbons put together, he put together a resource page. So if you go on the Super Chat, I'm going to open this link up. And I'm going to post that over there for people radio as well. I'm going to have to do this quickly because it's going to get loud. Alright, so there, the doot doot doo. I did it on the wrong computer, so now I got to copy it here. Alright, so I'm juggling links right now. But I'm gonna put this resource page link that Stephen Gibbons took his time, volunteered his time, and all his hard work and effort to share with people, you know, links to researchers and ideas. This is how this works. You click on that link right there over there for People for People Radio, you'll see what Stephen Gibbons has been working on. He did a wonderful job. He's got links to all kinds of researchers and probably more to come. But this is how this works. I share links with you. You share links with me. We share information. And if need be, we pull our resources. We build things. And we get people in our general vicinities to make things. And we, the people, develop a system to where we can actually share technologies, share resources, and knowledge amongst each other, and get things resolved. It's that simple. So ridiculously simple that it's mind-blowing. And all the technology available, like I've been saying, ad nauseum, is available. Go check out these video links that I posted in there this morning. Check out the information that I posted in there, what NASA says, our atmosphere is made up of. And sit back and think about things in a logical fashion. And even the video where the scramjet's running, and listen to the explanation of how it functions. And how a jet engine functions. Compressed air technology, jet engines, whatever, hydrogen technology, every single piece of the puzzle is there. Every single piece. And so for all those people out there in the alternative energy research communities, it's pretty much... been looking down on me for everything I said. Basically, I'm like a heretic in the alternative energy community. People think Oshaziz is crazy. I actually had people say that people don't want to talk to me because they think I've gone crazy. Well, you might very well be right. I may very well have gone crazy because science says that things are possible and you say that they're not. Science and mechanics and observation and everything that is blatantly obvious and everything that nature has taught all of humanity from day one says that things are possible, and you are saying they are not. You're quoting the same laws of physics that I studied my entire life. You're quoting the same science, but you're quoting it in an improper manner and misquoting it. And you're stuck so far in the school book that you've got one foot in the box and one foot out of the box, and you want free energy, but you just can't figure it out because you ain't paid attention. You ain't stepped out of that box long enough to see if you put all those pieces on the table, that they'll give you exactly what you wanted and more. And then you want to ostracize a man that is sitting there saying, look, it's right there in front of you. It's blatantly obvious. It's right there in front of you. The answer's sitting right there. If you want to learn, understand how electricity functions, watch water. It will show you. It'll flow the same way. It'll spread out the same way. It does the same thing. It always tries to find its level. Nature always tries to balance itself out. And anytime there's a disruption in that balance, nature will slap it back into place. Everything gets recycled. Everything gets reused or whatever. Nothing goes to waste. All you got to do is use what you already learned and a little bit of common sense. And you'd be surprised at what you can accomplish. So, if you think that I'm crazy, then don't share the podcast. If you think that I'm on the right track and everything that I'm telling you makes sense, then share the podcast. Replay it on your networks, chop up the best parts, erase the other parts, twist and manipulate it, or however you want to do it. Everything that's on Shaziz Radio is free. Nobody's asking for donations. Nobody's trying to sell you anything. Yeah, I even have a picture of a t-shirt that I'd like to see made, but I'm not selling t-shirts. I'm just asking you that if you want to help support me, maybe write it on a t-shirt with a Sharpie or write it on a postcard or some piece of paper, whatever, and, you know, get people to come visit. That's how you could help me to help the world in my part of the deal. So, I'm just doing the best I can and trying to make the world a better place. That's it. Now, volunteering my time and my finances, my resources, my funds to do whatever needs to be done to try to help people learn about things that already exist. And if that's something that can be done, I think we will be the better for it. The whole world, you know, nature can't just keep on doing this, man. Let me see. I'm going to try copy that. I'm going to try to share that over People for People Radio. And for those listening, once again, OSHAZIZ isn't trying to sell t-shirts. It's just an idea. Because what it says on that shirt is what I've been trying to say to everybody else. Mad science is the key to the truth about free energy. Ask me why, and it gives you a place to come and ask. That's it. That simple. I say we have free energy already. I say we want to utilize it. We get together. We build machines that are running efficiently. We shoot for super efficient, and if we get better than super efficient, then that's a plus. But efficiency is the key. If we can make these things run efficiently, less input, more output. See, it's not that energy that we're trying to get out more than we put in. The energy that we put in internal combustion engine is extremely powerful. We don't even use most of that energy. Most of it gets wasted because the piston's going up too, down too fast, and the exhaust valves are opening and closing too fast. And so most of the fuel gets spit out before it ever gets a chance to burn. But if we only put in exactly what we needed to get the same result, then that amount of fuel that was in that doggone fuel tank would go so much further, and the burns would be cleaner, And all of it is achievable with proper engineering. So, if you want help, support ShazizRadio.com. Take that phrase off of that t-shirt and share it with people. And if you have a social media network...
Well, my friend, free energy is all around you. While all of us researchers out here are doing work such as alternative energy ideas and many more,
it won't stop.
Right now you've got access to solar. I've got a video out there called Simple Solar would be a good one to start with.
Ah, there we go. Alright, so anyway, I'm giving it all away for free. Every bit of knowledge in my brain. And every bit of knowledge that I've gathered up from everybody and his brother. There are lots of brilliant individuals all over this planet. And if you listen to them, if you bring them together, you'll get the answers that you want. You'll be able to benefit all of humanity. And if you take a peek at what NASA had said that the atmosphere is made of, and you take a peek at physics and basic science and all the technologies available to you, everything from induction heating to compressor technology. Yeah, you did, Stephen. You got me good. And so, folks, check out Stephen's resource link. Check out the chat rooms. If you like this podcast, share it with somebody. Bring people to the table. Find your favorite researcher. Bring them to the table. And maybe if some of my old friends that hate my guts nowadays because I didn't say things that they wanted me to say, then maybe if you understand what I'm saying now, maybe you want to come back and join the show and let's get back to work. And that would be wonderful. Otherwise, you know, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. Mad Science Show is going to go on regardless. And if you want to join in on the Knights of the Round Table, it's the same time, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central Time. And if you're over there in Scotland or Ireland or any other place in the other time zones and my show's coming on too late for you, see if you can sweet talk somebody in your network to replaying the podcast early in the morning or something like that so you don't miss out on it, or download it at your leisure in the morning. It would be just as well. And share it with somebody. So, with that said, folks, you've been listening to the Mad Science Show. Peace and love to each and every one of you. And, you know, like I said, keep firing for energy. You sure haven't been listening to Mad Science. Are you crazy? Have you lost your ever-loving mind? Take care, everybody. Peace and love.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Hey, Doc, this is it.
Never mind that.
Why, that's me! Look at me! I'm an old man!
Hey, I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot at...
Thank God I still got my hair! What on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Wow, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course! Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars! This is truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an athlete. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
The flux capacitor storage... This sucker's electrical. but I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott! What the hell is a gigawatt?
How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts! Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
Look, all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium was available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Whoa, Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
Oh, she's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. I mean, that says it all. Doc, my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, it just might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.